Wednesday, May 29th, 2019. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another day of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope that your week is going by smoothly and that you are making it through what was hopefully a short week for you with the holiday this week. Hopefully you got a day off and the rest of this week is going by quickly. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us how your week is going. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you've got some feedback for the show. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you have a certain subject that you would like us to tackle here at The Dose. Reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Also, be sure you stop by tpublic.com and check out some of the Daily Dose gear that we have over there. We've got Daily Dose clothing. We've got hoodies, sweatshirts, t-shirts. We've also got things that you can use around the house or things that you may want for your office. Stickers, laptop covers, cell phone covers. Make sure that you stop by tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, and go find some of the Daily Dose gear that is available to you over there. Hey, today on the show, it is a holiday week, but never fear, we have some of the best of the Daily Dose for you this week. Today, we are flashing way back to some early episodes of the Daily Dose. The 2015 NBA Finals were over, and the Golden State Warriors were the champions. But on this throwback edition of the Daily Dose, we were actually discussing how different the NBA is now. And we were looking back at what caused so many of the changes that we see in today's era. It is a very different NBA than what we grew up with. We were discussing some of the reasons why. Then we take a look back at the top five choke jobs in sports of all time. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a flashback episode of the Daily Dose. Wednesday, June 24, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you're going to get anywhere else. Are you tired of the same nonsense that you hear on the other sports stations? Do you want to be a little bit more informed, maybe, than you're going to be if you tune into those stations? You need to check out the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. We bring you some insight that you're not going to get anywhere else. If you need something to listen to while you're at work and you're sitting at your computer, you're on the treadmill and you're putting in those steps and you're tired, and I know it's cool listening to music, but sometimes you just want to take your mind somewhere else. We can help you out with that. If you're sitting stuck in traffic, you need the Daily Dose. A couple different ways that you can contact me if you would like to hit me up for anything. You can find me on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y. Don't need to add the E or the I or any of that stuff. D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Same name for Facebook. You can find me there as well. If you would like to go over to our Daily Dose Sports website, go over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com, put up new articles there every week. We actually have a ton of things to get to. I've got a lot of things that I want to talk about this week because we have a lot of things going on in the world of sports. And some of them might be a little bit under the radar, but some of them are the big ones. Of course, we're going to talk NBA draft. The draft is tomorrow night. Going to be interesting to see where some of these players end up. And of course, our Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to miss that. Let's jump over to the NBA. We got a lot to talk about in the NBA. You know, I told you last week, and I just said, the game has changed. We've talked about this. The game has changed. You know, I talked about a month ago about what I love, why I love Steph Curry. Because what he brings to the game, yes, it's fun to watch. He's just that kid that you don't know what he's going to do next. But more importantly, what I love about Steph Curry is that kids that normally, like, you know, the little league kids and the middle school kids and the high school kids that would be wasting their time trying to dunk over and over and over. No, don't put any time on their game. They're just trying to dunk. Oh, yeah, I almost got one down. I know that when I was coaching, I'd have kids stay after practice. We'd do a 2-hour practice, run them to death. They can't hardly move. And then afterwards, somehow they'd find some energy and they'd be like, oh, I'm going to stay after like an hour and see if I can get a dunk down. What I like about Steph Curry's game is now you have kids watching that and saying, you know what? Instead of trying that dunk again and again and again, I'm actually might work, you know, on my passing, on my ball handling, on my shooting. I love that aspect to what Steph Curry has brought just in the last year or so. But the game is changing. And we really see it in the NBA. And it's not because of Steph. We might think it's because of Steph Curry. It goes way, way, way back before that though. And the player, I told you, the player that I think changed it might not be who you think. I want you to think about this. And yes, I'm going to go and kind of go story time on you here, but I want you to think about this just a little bit. You know, when you think of the game of basketball, it's always about who's the biggest, who's the big guy. Oh, you see a big guy walking, you know, through the store. Oh, he must play basketball. Wouldn't you hate to be that 6'10 guy that never played basketball? Because that's what everybody asks you. Oh, do you play basketball? Oh, do you play basketball? Oh, you must play basketball. Yeah, no, I'm a lawyer. But we've always considered that it's the biggest guy that's going to be the best at this game, because the game is putting a ball into a 10-foot hoop. So if you're taller, you have that advantage. So it's always been either the biggest guy or the most dominant athlete that could play above the rim usually won. And when you think back about this, I mean, think of like the 50s with George Mikan. Think of like the 60s with Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, Willis Reed. Getting into the 70s, you had Kareem, you had Wes Unseld, you had Willis Reed still going a little bit in the 70s. In the 80s, you started to see the change where it wasn't always the big guy, but it was the athletic guy, the guy that could play above the rim, the guy that could take over the game due to his athleticism. You had Magic, who was a 6'8", 6'9", guy playing point guard. You had the James Worthies, the Isaiah Thomases, who was just an amazing player. Little guy, but an amazing player at what he could do. And yes, he could actually get up himself. And in the 90s, you started seeing the Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, even the Kobe Bryant, the great athletes, or the big sky. But we've started to see that change a little bit. And the reason that you might think of, it might not be exactly what you think. Because it didn't start changing, believe it or not, with Steph Curry. It didn't start changing, even going a little bit before that, with like the San Antonio Spurs, who are not the biggest team, not the most athletic team. It started to change back, way, way back. I want to take you back a little bit before that. I want to take you back to 1988. And now you might, if you're like older, like if you're, let's say 35 plus, you hear 1988 and you probably like, oh, I don't know. That was like, what, 10 years ago? Yeah, that was like, 27 years ago. That was a while back. But I want to take you back to 88 and the 1988 Summer Olympics. They were in Seoul, South Korea that year. And we sent over our Team USA basketball team, where they lost to the Soviet Union by 6 and only won the bronze medal. The Soviets win the gold. Soviets had a pretty good team. They had some veteran players. They had some grown men. Sarunas Marcelonis, Arvydas Sabonis. Average age of that Russian team, with Soviet team, age 26. These were professional players. They weren't NBA players, but they were professional players. And on the Team USA side, average age of these players was 21. Here's the players that were on that team that lost in the 88 Olympics. Mitch Richmond, who was, I believe, was 23 years old at the time. You had two Charles Smiths. You had the kid from Pitt, and you had the kid from Georgetown. Bimbo Coles, Hersey Hawkins, Jeff Grayer, Willie Anderson, Stacey Ogman, Dan Marley, Danny Manning, J.R. Reed, and David Robinson went over to Seoul, South Korea, and lost, and ended up just getting the bronze medal. Here's the thing. It wasn't just that game. It wasn't just a one game thing. Team USA also lost in the 1990 FIBA World Championships to Yugoslavia. And then in 1991 at the Pan American Games, Team USA lost to Puerto Rico. So here was the thing. In 1989, FIBA ruled that NBA players could now play in international competition. Because up until then, you were only allowed to have amateurs. And pro leagues, you could play, but not the NBA. If you were in like the Russian pro league, you could play. If you were in the Italian pro league, you could play in the Olympics. But the NBA, you were not allowed to. In 1989, they lifted that. And so the U.S. kind of sick now of getting beat at the last two or three times they've gone to international competition. The Olympic Committee decides, hey, you know what? We're going to put together a squad. And we're not going to have tryouts like we used to have. You know, they used to have tryouts where you'd come in, you know, the best college players, that kind of, we're going to eliminate those tryouts. We're going to have a select team and we're going to invite only and we're going to pick the greatest players that we can assemble. And when the 92 Olympics comes around, we're going to send over some big dogs. They start inviting players. They start inviting the Michael Jordans, the Magic Johnsons, the Larry Birds. But there's a problem. There's one problem when you're doing this. See, many of these players have contracts with shoe companies. And that might not sound like a big deal, but the Olympics was sponsored by Reebok. And so a lot of these players were getting these invites and they were saying, I want to go, but it's not an event that Nike isn't thrilled about us going. And some of these players started hearing back from Nike, and Nike was saying, yeah, I'm not sure that's going to work out for you. And so a lot of these players are going, I'm not sure I'm going to go. I mean, when you look at like Michael Jordan, he'd already played once. He'd already gone over and got an Olympic medal once back in 84. So it wasn't as huge of a deal to him. But one player gets the invite. One player gets this invite. And he decides, you know what? I'm going. And so when he talks to his Nike people, they tell him, yeah, I'm not sure that you can really go over and participate in the Olympics because it's a Reebok situation and you're a Nike guy. And this player tells Nike, well, then tear up my contract because I'm going. And from that point, Nike changes its stance completely. They do a complete 180. They're like, well, no, you can go. You can go. That's fine. And as a result, Magic signs on and says he's going to go. Jordan signs on and says he's going to go. Charles Barkley signs on and says he's going to go. Scottie Pippen, Chris Mullin, Karl Malone, John Stockton. You put together this group. I mean, Larry Bird, Clyde Drexler, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson gets to go back, and then the college kid, Christian Laettner, gets to go. And this team goes over to the 92 Olympics in Barcelona. And to say that they dominate, it honestly doesn't do justice because they absolutely crush the competition. I mean, the games that they play, the games that they're winning by an average of 42 points a game. I mean, you have players from the other teams coming out to see this 92 team. And not only they're having to come out and play against them, they want to come out and get pictures. They want to come out and get autographs. They want to come out and see if they can get a jersey. I mean, playing against your heroes are what these other countries are having to do. So the 92 team, the dream team, as they were labeled, makes it to the gold medal game. They beat Croatia. And the funny thing about beating Croatia in that game, Croatia loses by 22. And that was the lowest point margin there had been with any of these games up until this point. In fact, the Croatian players were so happy that they only lost by 22 in the gold medal game that they actually were coming out and taking pictures of the scoreboard because they were like, that's so amazing that we only lost by 22. But yeah, how did this change the NBA? Okay, so we took the dream team over there. Big deal. Well, see, here's the thing. Because Team USA was bigger. They were more dominant. They were the bigger team. We talked about the bigger team usually had more success. The more athletic team, the more powerful team had more success. And that was definitely the case in the 92 Olympics. The bigger, stronger, faster team won. But you see, there were young players all over the world that were watching the Olympics. They were glued to the Olympics because it was amazing that you could see like all of your favorite players in one game. You could see Bird playing with Jordan, with Pippen, with Barkley, with Drexler. I mean, it was truly amazing. And there were young kids all over the world that were watching this. And there was a kid in Germany named Dirk Nowitzki watching this. There was a kid in France named Tony Parker watching this. Manu Ginobili in Argentina has said that he watched the 92 Olympics. The Gasol brothers over in Spain. Serge Ibaka in Africa. Boris Diaw also in France. Andrew Bogut in Australia. Leandro Barbosa also over in Brazil. See, many of these players, they watched the 92 Olympics and they thought, you know, I can't compete athletically with what those guys do. I can't jump like Jordan. I don't have the athleticism that a Scottie Pippen has. I certainly don't have the size and the dominance of someone like Patrick Ewing or David Robinson. I can't do those things physically, but I can play a different style. And I can play a style that has spacing. I can play pick and roll and pull you out away from the basket, and I can find mismatches, and I can find ways to attack better players. You're starting to see these big men that have better passing skills. You're starting to see these big men that can put it on the floor a little bit, can shoot from outside. It's not just a back to the basket, go down to the low post and stay there. You've started to see that transition. And I can even the playing field by playing a different brand of basketball. And you know what? The NBA has changed completely. Take a look at some of the winners that we've seen. Think of that Pistons team back in 2000 under Larry Brown with Chauncey Billups. That team didn't have any athleticism beating the Lakers. They had no business beating the Lakers. Think of these teams that Greg Popovich has put out with the San Antonio Spurs. The spacing, the discipline, the cuts, a big man can step out and hit a 19-20 footer. We can move. We can run some pick and roll. We can find mismatches. We can get some open looks and knock down those open shots. And of course, this year with Golden State, here's the prime example. You're going against the most physically dominant player in the game in LeBron James. But because of the style that you play, you can beat him. Because of the spacing, because of your passing ability, because of your screen and roll ability, because of your ability to knock down shots in space, you can beat the more powerful, the stronger athlete. And it all goes back to that 88 Olympics when we lost in South Korea. Now that player that told Nike, tear up my contract because I'm going, that kind of opened the door for all those other players in the 92 Dream Team to say, well, if he's going and he has that deal with Nike, then I guess I'm going too. Most important player might have changed the game as we know it today, at least. And I know these things are cyclical. I know we're going to get back to a big man era. We're going to get back to that athletic era. But don't forget, the game is changed right now. That player that did that, John Stockton. John Stockton told Nike, well, tear up my contract because I'm going to the Olympics no matter what because I want to play in the Olympics. I want to represent my country. It was so big to him that he did it. And when he did it, Nike totally changed its stance on whether or not players could go over there. Change the game. Change the game of how we see basketball today. It is totally, totally different than what we watched back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, even the 90s. NBA draft takes place tomorrow night, Thursday night, in Brooklyn, New York. I want to talk a little bit about the draft and some of the players, where some of the players may go, a couple of the players that I like, a couple of players that maybe I'm not quite as big on. Looking at the draft, first pick of the draft this year, Minnesota Timberwolves own that. Should be fun to see who they're going to pick that will be leaving as soon as his rookie contract runs out. I believe they'll take Karl Anthony Towns, the big kid out of Kentucky. I like Karl Anthony Towns a lot. It's weird, though. When you're watching the draft tomorrow night and they talk to Karl Anthony Towns,
and he kind of talks and he gets up there and he discusses about the, I'm just happy to be with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He kind of sounds like a little nerd. He doesn't sound like a big 6'11 beast that he is. Love the way Towns plays. Not only can he go down in the post, be a low post guy, back to the basket, be comfortable down there, he can step out and shoot it from 20 feet. Really, really do like Karl Anthony Towns. Has a lot of upside to him. He could be a star. Lakers have the number 2 pick that the NBA made sure to hand them because they wanted to get Los Angeles back to being relevant again. Yeah, I said it. We know what's really going on. Lakers, I think they're going to take Duke freshman Jahlil Okafor, another kid that I really, really like. Jahlil Okafor, and I think he has a long way to go. I think he has a long, long way to go to be a complete player, but I think he could be a star. He's a kid, I hate making these comparisons, I really do, but he's a kid that reminds you just a tiny bit of Tim Duncan. He's comfortable with his back to the basket. He's comfortable with a turn and face. He's a much better passer than I think he gets credit for. The one thing, the one hesitation I have with Jahlil Okafor, I don't think he's a very good defender. I think he's got a long, long way to go as a defender. And don't forget how he got lit up by Frank Kaminsky in that finals game. So I think they'll go with Okafor. I think he's a good fit. When you have Okafor and then you have Julius Randle coming back healthy, I mean, it's almost like they just need to get, I don't know, 3 other players and they'd be right there. We'll see. Philadelphia 76ers are number 3 on the clock, and I think they're going to take the guard out of Ohio State, D'Angelo Russell. There's a few people that really like Russell's athleticism. I don't think he's that, you know, Russell Westbrook kind of player, but he is an explosive player. He is a guy that can do a number of things. I think the Sixers take him. My only cause for concern on this pick is we've seen that the Sixers just keep drafting big men over and over and over and over. I mean, it would be just like them to take. And now we're hearing that Joel Embiid, the big kid they took last year, might be out already for next season.
He like hurt himself sitting on the bench the whole season because he didn't play. He had that foot injury or whatever. Now we're hearing the foot isn't healed. They already have Nerlens Noel. Now they have Embiid who might be hurt. So they might take the Porzingis kid. I'm not going to say for sure that they won't. The big kid out of Latvia, another 6'11 kid. I think Philly is just going to load up their team with 6'11 kids. They don't have anyone that can pass them the ball. They don't have anyone that can shoot the ball from the outside, but they're just going to load up on big kids. That's my only word of caution. I think they probably should take Russell. Wouldn't surprise me if they took the big kid out of Latvia. The New York Knicks. Who knows what the New York Knicks will do? I know there's a lot of people saying they'll take the Porzingis kid out of Latvia. I think that they could take, Emmanuel Mudiay, the kid that went, he was scheduled to go. He's an American kid. He was scheduled to go to SMU and play for Larry Brown, and he decided financially that it would be better off for him and his family if he went over to China and played in China for a year professionally and then come back and get drafted. So that's what he did. Put up, I guess, decent numbers in China, but it's China, so it's kind of hard to tell, you know, how comparable that is to the NBA. Turned the ball over way too much, didn't shoot the ball all that well. So really, it kind of sounds like he'd fit in really, really well with Carmelo Anthony in New York. I think that might be the pick for the New York Knicks. The Orlando Magic, they've got a number of different guys that they're trying to figure out what to do with. I think they're getting a nice small nucleus together. But I think they might take, is it Mario Hezonja, the kid out of Croatia? They say Hezonja has a huge, huge upside. I know they're trying to compare him to Dirk Nowitzki. We'll see if that actually comes to pass, but there's a number of draft experts that really like Mario Hezonja, the kid out of Croatia. 6'8", can shoot it from the outside, can go down in the post a little bit. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I've heard too many people try to compare them, you know, to the Dirk Nowitzkis, or here's the next, you know, here's the American Kevin Durant, or you know, the American version. I don't know if I buy all these comparisons exactly, but I get what you're saying. Coming in, by the way, at the number 7 pick would be our local good old, you know, Denver Nuggets. I the pick that I would like to see them take is Justice Winslow, the kid out of Duke. I think he is a tough kid. I think he is a scrappy kid that hates to lose. Having said that, I don't think the Nuggets will go anywhere near him because he's a tough kid and he hates to lose. And why would you want that? Whoever the Nuggets pick, just know this, that in 4 or 5 years, they'll be playing for someone else and they'll probably be playing in the finals while the Nuggets are at home watching them on TV. That's how this franchise works. You guys don't realize that's how this franchise works. That's just what happens. Gonna give you a couple players that I actually do like, in the draft. I told you, I do really like, both those top two guys. I think that, both Okafor and Karl Anthony Towns have a big, big upside. I think they both, could be very, very good players, for quite a while. Quietly, I like Sam Decker a little bit. I don't know where he's going to end up, but I think he is way more athletic, than his white skin might portray. I know there's a number of people that are down on Willie Cauley-Stein, the big kid out of Kentucky. He has no offense to his game. But can't you just pick and roll and be a really, really good defender? And Frank Kaminsky, obviously the big kid out of Wisconsin. Again, I know he's probably going to be looked down on a little bit, because, well, he's white. But don't forget the job he did in carrying that Wisconsin team, at times, you know, all the way to the finals, in the NCAA tournament. Frank Kaminsky is a lot better than you think. And the thing about Kaminsky that I really like, it's not just that he can go inside and he has a lot of low post moves. He can step outside and he can stretch your defense out a little bit too. Couple players that I would, just a little bit cautious about. Montrezl Harrell, the guard out of Louisville, just seems like a kid that sometimes kind of forgets what he's doing and kind of forgets exactly where he's at a lot of the times. I don't want that type of player. I don't want a disinterested player when I'm going out and trying to compete at the highest level. And there were times that Harrell just seemed like he kind of forgot exactly where he was at and what he was doing. And Tyus Jones, I know we talked about Tyus Jones a little bit, on the show, you know, back with Duke. I think he's a guy that probably is jumping to the NBA before he is ready. Not that great of a shooter. Physically, doesn't have nearly as much as maybe you would want a player in that position to have. Tyus Jones, the good thing is that he does kind of look like the black Adam Carolla. So there is that. as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Our Daily Dose Top 5 this week. You know, you might have saw on Sunday, U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, which, by the way, the course itself, and I know golfers complain about the course a lot, but that course at Chambers Bay, I mean, Iraq would have looked more lush than that course. Dustin Johnson has a 12-foot eagle putt to win it. Missed it. Okay. Hey, 12-foot eagle putt, that's a decent shot. And then he missed like the 2-foot putt to tie it. And then he ended up losing to Jordan Spieth, and didn't even make it. So I started to think about what are the biggest chokes we've ever seen. And I don't know that I'm putting him as a big choker. I genuinely don't know if I'm going to put him down as a big choker. That's a tough, the first putt was tough. Okay. The second one maybe putt him. But what constitutes as a choke? It might be different, from one person to the next, because we hear that a lot. Like you hear that a lot now. We hear, oh, so-and-so choked. Oh man, did you see the Broncos against the Seahawks? Oh, they totally choked. Oh, did you see the Seahawks against the Patriots? Oh, they totally choked. Here's what constitutes as a choke. If because of the pressure, you fail to do things that you usually are capable of doing, then that's a choke. To go out and say, hey, they outplayed us and they beat it, that's not a choke. To go out and miss a tough putt or a tough play, that's not a choke. That's just, hey, it's a tough play. I've always heard, Scott Norwood, Buffalo Bills kicker. And believe me, I'm the first to make fun of the Buffalo Bills, but I've always heard Scott Norwood in that Super Bowl against the New York Giants that he choked. It was a 48-yard field goal. That's not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination. That's not a choke. That's a tough kick. If you want to get on somebody for choking, start, you know, getting on that Kelly gun offense for not getting him down, you know, for a closer kick. That would be more of the choke than it's on, you know, a guy with a single bar, face mask making a 50-yard kick. It's not on him. So let's count down the top five chokes of all time. Number five on our list, the 2004 New York Yankees in the ALS versus the Boston Red Sox. They were up 3-0. In this series, Red Sox can't win. Red Sox don't win anything. They always find a way to lose and to go home early. You know, in those first three games, Yankees versus Red Sox, the combined score was 32-16. This wasn't even a competitive series. The Yankees were crushing the Red Sox. And then they lost 6-4. And then they lost 5-4. And then they lost 4-2. And then they got hammered in game 7, 10-3. Yeah, I'm going to put that on my choke list. Because you had four games to somehow make it right. You had four games to beat a team that you had been beating and beating and beating. 2004 Yankees. One of our top five chokes. Number four on our list. Oh, I remember this one well. The 1998 NFC Championship game. Vikings versus Falcons. Vikings are up 7 late. And they can go up 10 if kicker Gary Anderson, who hasn't missed a field goal all season, just makes a 38-yard field goal. Now again, I'm not talking about 48. I'm talking about 38. Not only am I talking about 38, you're up 7. This is no pressure. Just step up and knock this through. You hit 38-yard field goals all the time. And you're playing in a dome. It's not like, well, you know, it was a snowy field or there was wind. You're in a dome. And to say that he shanked that kick, I mean, he wasn't even close. That was a choke job. Gary Anderson missing a 38-yard field goal in the 1998 NFC Championship game definitely gets on our choke list. Number three biggest chokes of all time. I'm going to take you back to 1995, Houston Rockets versus the Orlando Magic in game 1. The Magic in this game, you had Shaquille O'Neal. You had Nick Anderson, you had, Penny Hardaway. That was a pretty good squad that they had. 10 seconds left in the game, up by 3. Nick Anderson gets fouled. Up by 3. Hit 1, make it a 2-possession game. He misses it. Then he misses the second one, too. Okay, but Nick Anderson gets his own rebound and gets fouled. He's gonna go to the line for 2 more shots. He misses the third one. And then, just for good measure, he goes ahead and misses the fourth one. Missed four free throws within about 20 seconds. Kenny Smith goes down to the other end for Houston, bangs a three at the buzzer. Rockets go on to win in overtime. Nick Anderson, I know you can make free throws. Nick Anderson was a pretty good free throw shooter. That is a choke, folks. Number two on our list, biggest chokes of all time. Gotta be Greg Norman in the 96 Masters. Gotta be Greg Norman. In fact, you know what I thought was kind of strange? And I don't want to bash on the network broadcast too much, but you know, on Sunday, you had this whole situation, you know, with Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth and all this. Fox actually had Greg Norman in the booth, and they didn't like ask him. So what's he feeling? What is Dustin Johnson feeling right now? What's going through his head right now? You've been in this situation. If anyone knows the situation, believe me, it is the Shark. Greg Norman knows the situation because in 96, he was up by six strokes at the 12th hole. He didn't just let Nick Faldo come back and just, you know, beat him by a putt. He lost by five strokes to Nick Faldo. In six holes, he dropped 11 strokes. I've personally, I don't know that I've ever seen a individual meltdown like I saw from Greg Norman in 1996 at the Masters. Absolutely incredible. And our number one choke of all time. You knew the Buffalo Bills were going to end up on this, didn't you? I mean, that's who they are. But they're actually on the other side of it. Our number one choke of all time, the 93 Houston Oilers up 35-3 on the Buffalo Bills and somehow give up 35 straight second half points. Bills go on to win it. I watched that game. I remember watching that game live and just thinking there is no way. But Houston totally changed what they did. They had been attacking. They had been throwing the ball down the field. They had been putting pressure, down the field on the corners, with the great wide receiving core that they had. And they totally stopped and changed what they did. That was the biggest takeaway I have from that. Our number one choke of all time, the 93 Houston Oilers. Hey, I hope you are enjoying our look back at some of the previous episodes of The Daily Dose. I have to say thank you all so much for listening to the show. For all of you that reach out and that share the show with someone else, thank you so much. We appreciate that. Hey, if you're not subscribed to The Daily Dose wherever you listen, please make sure you click that little subscribe or follow button. That way you don't miss a single episode. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a wonderful Wednesday.